Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of Chasing Perfection, a brand new UConn women's basketball podcast from the UConn blog. I'm Daniel Connolly. I'm here with Megan Gower. What's up, Megan?
Hey, Dan. Excited to be starting this episode one.
Yeah, super excited. It's been in the works for a long time. Took a little while to figure out the name. Thank you, Dan Madigan, for the name suggestion. So we're really excited about the podcast. I think from my unofficial research, it's the first fully specific UConn women's basketball podcast. So as just a general idea of what to expect for the first few months until the season starts, we're planning to go every other week. And then hopefully when and if the season begins, we'll go once a week. After this, we're hoping to get some guests on. We have a few ideas, but nothing totally lined up yet. So I don't want to spoil any surprises. But yeah, we're just looking forward to having a place to talk about UConn women's basketball and everything that's going on with them. All right, so I guess we should just jump right into it. So last Monday, we finally got a chance to meet with the entire team. It was basically the Zoom version of Geno's For the Kids golf tournament. All 11 players talked, Geno Auriemma talked. Megan, just what general takeaways did you have from the first time we met this year's team?
I think one thing is there's a lot of new faces, obviously, six freshmen, yeah. So a lot of changes from last year, and then obviously we didn't really see Avita on the court last year either, so kind of another sort of new face. Crystal and Meg are gone, so a new leadership group as well, a little bit younger of a leadership group with Avita being her first year playing for the team, and then the two juniors in Kristen and Olivia. But other than that, I think a lot of good stuff came out of that about what's going on in the offseason. Kristen and Anna both talked about how they've gotten into better shape. So kind of a lot of stuff to look forward to on the court whenever that happens, that is.
Yeah, for sure. I thought Avina's really interesting to me because obviously she didn't play last year, kind of got hosed at every single opportunity by just like life in general, had the knee surgery once she got to campus, got her waiver rejected by the NCAA, which I think UConn was, or not, I don't think UConn was really upset about it. Then she's at least able to practice, but then it gets to New Year's Eve and she gets the second knee surgery. She has to sit out the rest of the year. And then she gets stuck on campus after COVID shuts everything down. And she's the only one on her team on campus. And it's her and a cook, as Gino said. So like, she's just had, it's been such a rough go for UConn, but I find it really interesting that she's a captain, even though she's never played in a game here. The fact that she's has that type of standing in such little time is really impressive. Like everyone that's ever said anything about Avina has just been like as effusive as they can about how incredible of a leader she is and how well she's embraced the program. And I think it would just be really funny for her to like help UConn win a national championship for the sole purpose of watching Tennessee fans have a meltdown over it.
I mean, fair, that a totally wild thing that could happen, right? She was a number two recruit coming out of her class behind Megan Walker. So obviously comes with some kind of high regards on the court, had a pretty good season her freshman year at Tennessee. Obviously, it's been a bit since she's been on the court, but it'll be exciting to kind of see, how that shapes up.
It'd also be really funny if, like, you kind of had the number one 2017 class that was what Avina started in. She was the number two one in that. And now UConn doesn't have a single person left in that class. But imagine if, like, the main driver of their next national championship was from that freshman class and none of them that originally came. That would be very on brand for that class. I also am really interested to see what Kristen can do this year, because I mean, statistically, she really wasn't that bad last year, but you could tell she was struggling, and she even admitted she was struggling, but Gino said she's in much better shape. And I think just the amount of time that she's played basketball in the last few years with USA 3-on-3, I think the time off is actually going to be one of those things that works out well for her.
Agreed. I mean, obviously she sounded super excited about where she's at right now. I think freshman year, Kristen Williams really impressed probably both of us, a lot of people. She was really great in her freshman season. So, I mean, even if she's just back at that level, she's going to have a great season, but assuming she's probably going to build on that some, it should be a really exciting junior season from her.
Right. And what you see is what you get from Kristen Williams. Like she really doesn't hide anything super well. So the fact that she's this excited about the new season starting, it's got to be a really good sign. I just, all the returners in general, I mean, we could go through every single one, but it's like every single one has something to prove. Like you don't have a single, I mean, you kind of know what you're getting in Kristen and Olivia, and to a certain extent, Anna and Aubrey, but they all have something to prove because they really all need to take a step up. You're losing a ton of production with Crystal and Megan. So Gino said he's been really impressed with how everyone's come back, but I'm just really excited to see how everyone progresses in that roles, because that's just the way college athletics works. Like the players need to progress. And from as long as UConn's been good, they've had those younger players step up, but I still feel like there's always that surprise of like last year, Kristen maybe wasn't as good as we thought she was going to be. And when you go back to the 2016-17 year, I don't think anyone thought that team was going to be as good as they were. They weren't supposed to go undefeated. So I'm really looking forward to whenever the season does start, what the returning group actually looks like.
Agreed. I'm especially excited to see what Aubrey Griffin looks like. I feel like she's just such a fun player to watch. Obviously had huge moments kind of off the bench for them this season, especially on the defensive end. Reminds me a lot of Gabby Williams. So we all know how Gabby Williams' career went. So
Right. And she's really interesting because, I mean, last year she was basically running around with her head cut off and just causing mayhem everywhere, which like there's a role for that on every single team. I think that's pretty much what you're going to be expecting Mira McLean and Aaliyah Edwards to be doing. But she said she's been working out with her brothers over the summer. One has been playing Division I basketball. The other one's committed to Duke. I mean, if you're a men's basketball player and you're committed to Duke, you're one of the best players in the country. So she's not just practicing with the best women's player in the country. She's practicing with the best men's player. So if she can have a more refined skill set, especially on offense, last year she was pretty much just driving to the hoop. If she can start putting up some shots and be a little less frenetic and frantic on both ends of the court, I don't see any reason that she couldn't be an All-American next season, aside from the fact that, like, I think you could say that there's a possibility that every player – all five returners could be All-Americans.
Yeah, so they can't, well, theoretically they could, but they can't all be All-Americans, so someone will have to stand out. Agreed. I think, you know, when you're thinking about, like, conference level, like, Big East Defensive Player of the Year, that's probably, like, a battle between Liv and then Aubrey. It'll be interesting to kind of see who can take that. I think they both are, like, just so strong defensively, so it'll be interesting to kind of watch that.
Right, oh my God. Imagine Liv if she's not getting into foul trouble like every other game. Because I think it was in like mid-January, she was on pace to just totally shatter the school's like shot block records. And even not playing in, assuming they got to the Final Four, five more games, she still finished in the top 10 in like most categories. So, and then there were a lot of games last season that she was only playing in like less than 10 minutes a game because Gina was pissed at her. So I think she's just going to be such a force this year that we haven't seen down low from UConn since, I don't know, like Stephanie Dolson, maybe. Even they haven't really had a like really, really good center in a long time.
Yeah, agreed. And I feel like also, you know, not playing her for more than 10 minutes because he's pissed is just not going to be an option this year unless you're going to give a freshman a ton of minutes. Like, she's going to have to be in the game. So as long as she can stay out of foul trouble, I think she's going to be a lot of fun to watch this year. And like you said, just looks like she's put on some muscle over the summer and stuff. If she can be kind of a force underneath the rim for UConn, that's going to be a huge asset that we haven't seen in a while, which is probably one of the things that's kind of hurt them when they're like trying to win a championship in the last few years, is not having a strong presence there.
Right, because I remember the Notre Dame, the first Notre Dame Final Four in Columbus, Jessica Shepherd, they just had absolutely no answer for her. And even this past year, like you obviously had Liv, but she clearly wasn't ready to take on, I don't want to say she wasn't ready to take on the starting role, but she wasn't ready to be the number one only post player on the team. And you could tell that she struggled against those bigger teams because she would put up really good numbers against like Oklahoma, who didn't have anyone who was taller than 6 feet. But then she goes up against one of the best post players in the country and she kind of faded. But just an entire summer where she has that work ethic that Gino talked about her developing after the Oregon game, and how she went from one of the worst practice players on the team to one of the best, like, and the fact that it seems like Jamel Elliott, the new assistant coach, really has figured out how to push her buttons to the point that, like, I think she's going to be competing to be one of the best centers in the country.
Yeah, which will be awesome for this team. It's really what they need. If she can play at that level, the ceiling for this team is a lot higher than it is if she's not playing at that level.
Right, for sure. And I think just the biggest thing is going to be who's behind her. Cause last year, I think Gino would kind of use Kyla in that center role, but it, a lot of times when Liv got into foul trouble, it was Aubrey coming in the game. So I think that's a really interesting lineup if you're using Aubrey at the five, because that's how they used Gabby Williams. She was a de facto center despite being 5'11". And I think you add in the fact that you have two players that have a similar skill set to Aubrey coming in and Mira McLean and Aaliyah Edwards. I think it's going to be more of a small ball type setup if Liv's not in the game, compared to maybe using like Piath Gabriel as a true center in there.
Right. Yeah. That's definitely going to vary, you know, who you're playing. It's probably not going to make sense to play Aubrey at the five when you've got like the best centers against you if you're playing like South Carolina, for instance, with, you know, Willie Boston on there. But agreed, as most teams, like that's not an elite team with an elite center, they'll be able to play Aubrey at the five, and it'll be a lot of fun to watch kind of the small ball lineups.
Yeah, I think one of the things that stood out that we learned from the availabilities was Paige, who, it just to go on a sidebar, it feels, is it me or does it feel really weird that Paige is like actually at UConn to play basketball?
It does. I feel like because we never really finished last season. So it's like it has arrived, like the Paige era has arrived, but it doesn't really feel like it's arrived. I also can't believe we made it, you know, how long into this podcast talking about the season without mentioning that Paige has arrived at UConn.
If you had the over for I don't have my watch going, yeah, Paige Beckers is like the seventh or eighth players that we've mentioned. It's just like there's like so much attention about her and so much hype that, like, I was saying this to someone else, it almost feels like she's some like mythological creature. Like she's a mythological hero, not an actual basketball player. That's just some 18-year-old kid, because just the attention and the headlines and everything that she gets is just like so much bigger than, like, I don't even see high school kids, except maybe Zion, that get this type of attention. It's insane.
Yeah, it's totally insane, but also really awesome just in general for the women's game, right? Like, you didn't see any kind of this hype around, like, Stewie when she came in. And so to see it kind of on the women's side is really exciting to see. I think it kind of puts the women's college basketball a little bit more in the national spotlight than it usually is. Like you said, kind of similar level of hype to, like, what Zion got. So really an insane level of attention. So it'd be really exciting to kind of see how that folds out now that she's in college. I can only imagine it's going to grow from the type of attention she was getting in high school. So,
right. Especially at UConn. Like, right. I don't mean this as like a dig at other programs, but like no one has as much attention as what's at UConn. Like, imagine if Sabrina played at UConn. Like, I don't think you, like, there's enough seats in Gamble to handle all the media that we're going to be showing up to those games. It would have been insane. Like, I feel like Paige is, like, we're going to look back at Sabrina and the level of attention is not even going to be remotely close by the time Paige is like a sophomore or junior, because like it's just going to be so much. And I am a little terrified that it's a little too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot, right? She's an 18-year-old kid. It's a lot
right,
of expectation,
exactly.
A lot of attention. It's a lot for anyone to handle, let alone an 18-year-old.
And it's like, all right, the first game, if she has like 12 points and like 4 assists, like in a normal world, like first game for a freshman, that's a really good game. And I feel like if she isn't scoring 30 points a game, people are going to be losing their minds, because we all know that this isn't the most sane fan base sometimes. So at least she seems to have a really good kind of perspective of and mentality of what to expect at UConn. And she seems to handle the attention really well for being how young she is. So hopefully that continues and the like pressures don't weigh on her. But I guess to get back to the original point we were at, I found it really interesting that Paige already was kind of talking about what this team is going to be like. She thinks it's going to be a very fast team, going to be doing a lot of shooting, up tempo. Hopefully it's going to be more fun to watch than last season.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, well, you've got a backcourt, right, of like Kristen Williams, number one recruit, Paige, number one recruit, Avita, number two recruit. Like between the three of them, something should be fast and exciting.
They probably are good at basketball.
Yeah.
Just
a little.
It is amazing, like the difference between last year and this year, like already through one availability. There's just like last year, there just kind of seemed to always be this cloud hanging over last year's team, no matter what happened, until I guess like the AAC tournament, it seemed to be lifting a little bit, but there was just always something happening with this team where something wasn't going right. And it all already seems like this year it's more positive and just more upbeat. Obviously it's super early, so that can still change, but there's just a different vibe that's going on, I think.
Agreed. I feel like even from the first game last year was, who did they play? Cal, I believe.
Cal. That game
opener.
Was brutal.
And like they won, but it was a very underwhelming win. Like it was pretty much a mess. And like from right. day one, there was just like this, yeah, like no one was ever happy in post-game availability.
Right. It was like, we didn't really know what to expect. Like, all right, if these guys like step up, they still could be pretty good. It's going to be tough to replace Fee and Lou. Cal game happens and it's like, oh, I don't know. And then like, it's not like they really got that much better. I mean, it was like January, I think, that Memphis was close to them in the fourth quarter. Like they were close in AAC games up until the fourth quarter, a lot of the year. And we've never seen that before.
Yeah, it was a very different year, I feel like, for UConn basketball in general. Just like for fans, I'm sure, especially that didn't overreact, but yeah, just a very, very different year.
Right, and they still lost only 3 games.
Yep.
Like, I feel like that's also like it's tough to judge last year's team because they played the 3 like clearly best teams in the country. They didn't really get like a top matchup that like step below. Like an Oregon State or a Stanford, which I feel like would have been a better measuring test. And even still, once the tournament came, as long as they weren't in Oregon's bracket, because they weren't beating Oregon. But I would have really enjoyed seeing a second matchup with South Carolina or even Baylor, because like both those games for large portions of it were close and UConn was just slightly below at the time and they couldn't finish it out. But I mean, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, I guess we will never know. But yeah, like you said, I mean, the Baylor game was close until the midway through the fourth quarter. I feel like it was a close game. And then South Carolina, minus that like first quarter where they just like couldn't hit a shot to save their lives.
2 points.
Like, the rest of it was pretty close. So agreed. One of those matchups again would have been fun to see.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now, I guess one availability. So let's get some hot takes going. So what do you think? If you had to guess right now, who's your starting lineup when the ball tips off in God knows when?
All right. I'm going to go definitely the 4 returners. So Kristen, Liv, Aubrey, Anna, and then I think Avina. I don't know that Paige starts off the bat. Just, I mean, Gino's track record, the chance that a freshman starting in
right.
game 1, right? So, yeah, I would go the 4 returners plus Avina.
Right. The one that I'm most curious about, because I think that would probably be my guess too, but I'm very curious about Aubrey. Like, at what point do like, I guess she's not redundant on the roster because she's pretty much the only wing, whereas everyone else is a guard. But is she someone that would be like really good to bring off the bench, or is she just going to be like so good that you can't really afford to keep her on the bench? I think that's the one that holds me up, is like, where is Aubrey and is she going to be ready to start? And also just where's Paige coming in? Because obviously she's the number one recruit and Kristen started a few years ago, but I feel like Kristen starting was a little more out of necessity, even though she definitely earned it. Like if they had a roster like they had a couple of years ago, like during the Stewie era, she obviously wouldn't be starting. So I think Paige is going to be the one that starts. And then I'm honestly a little worried about Avina. Like, I don't think it's good that she said her knee isn't 100% when she's had two surgeries on it. And it's been what, 7-8 months since she's had that last one. Like, it, I could just be reading too far into it, but she didn't really sound super optimistic about it, calling it like day to day.
Yeah, gotcha. I feel like she's kind of one where there might be more time before the season, so that might be the benefit. Like, are they really going to start at the beginning of November?
Right. I don't know.
It doesn't seem that likely. So, you know, if they're not starting till January, that's a whole different ball game in terms of her recovery. But yeah, that's a valid point. She might still start, but her minutes certainly might be limited if she's not at 100%.
Yeah, I'm just worried that it might be like a lingering thing, because knees are so tricky that, like, if it's not fixed with two surgeries, like, what else can you really do? And is it just going to be a management thing? I'm also not really sure, like, who's actually a point guard on this team, because Avina kind of played the point at Tennessee from what I'm aware, right? But then Kristen, I think, is better off as a shooting guard. And then Anna, who I think could handle some duty sometimes, is also better off the ball. And I don't know if you want someone like Paige or Nika running the point as a freshman. So it just seems like there's not really a true point guard on the roster that's going to be ready to go from day one. So I'm curious if they'll do something like point guard or by committee. Or I remember last year, Gino made the reference to Diana Taurasi's career, or the last few years of her career, when they basically told Maria Conlon that all she needed to do was dribble it past midcourt and pass it to Diana. So I feel like that kind of might be what the point guard does this year, especially with a team of, like, if you're playing three guards, and then Liv's obviously a really good passer, so you don't really need like a total facilitator out there. I'm very interested to see how they manage that and who is bringing the ball up during that first game.
Yeah, agreed. I think we saw, you know, Kristen run the point a little bit last year when Crystal was not on the floor. So she seems like kind of a obvious like successor to that. But also, like you said, Afina ran the point some at Tennessee. I could see a kind of a combination between the two of them to start off, kind of alternating. I think,
yeah,
off the ball, so hopefully she won't be in that role too much. But
yeah, all right, so let's talk about the freshmen then, because we've kind of mentioned them in passing, but six freshmen is a lot, five scholarship players, and then Autumn Chasson got added as a walk-on just a few weeks ago. So let's do some power rankings. Let's rank who you think is going to be the most impactful freshman to the least impactful freshman.
Okay. Well, obviously Paige is number one. That
one, I was going to be really concerned if you didn't put Paige at number one.
The other ones, maybe not as easy. So yeah, Paige first for sure. I guess we can put the walk on as the last one. So Autumn at the bottom. So that's one and six. So that makes it a little bit easier. Sorry, Autumn. yeah, the 2 through 5, I feel like it's hard. It's going to depend. I mean, you've got Nika Mule. Is it Mule? I'm saying it wrong.
Mule. It's like Mule, like a donkey.
Okay. So, yeah, you've got Nika Mule, who probably has some, she's coming from Croatia, so she's got a little bit of international experience. I think that tends to help players be a little bit more ready coming in their freshman season. So, I could see her being kind of a little bit less of a raw freshman talent, similar to what we saw from Anna last year, right? Where she kind of a little bit, her game's a little bit more developed than your typical high school senior. So I guess, but she's also a guard, which has a lot.
Right, that's a pretty loaded backcourt.
Yeah. this is a tough one. I feel like Mia McLean is just such an interesting player that I'm going to put her at 2. She's, like, very athletic, going to be kind of like a maybe Aubrey's off the bench replacement possibly. So
right.
Yeah, I feel like she's that too. Struggling. Sorry.
I put you on the spot.
Yeah. Let's see. I mean,
all right. So you've got 1, 2, and 6 down.
Yes, 1, 2, and 6. Well, Gabriel is one of the only players on the team with size. So I feel like even if she's not playing a ton of minutes, she does kind of have an option to come in off the bench if Liv's in foul trouble. She's going to be a little bit more raw, but in kind of conference games and not against top opponents, that might not be as big of a deal. So I feel like just giving them the added size inside is going to be an interesting thing. So maybe her at 3. All right. Now,
so you've got Aaliyah Edwards and why am I blanking? Who's the last one? Is it just Aaliyah?
Oh,
no.
It's Nika because I haven't placed her yet. I talked about her, but I didn't put her in.
Oh, that's right. All right, so you've got Aaliyah and Nika.
Yes.
4 and 5.
Right. I'm going to put Aaliyah at 4, another really athletic player. Okay. And then Nika at 5, not because I don't think she's going to be good, but just because there's just already so much depth in that backcourt. There's going to be, I think, that's limited fair. Opportunities for her to get minutes.
Yeah. See, the thing with Piath is, like, she's got the size, but she's also really raw. So can, between now and whenever they start playing, get her to a point where, like, basically all they need her to do is not be a turnstile on defense and rebound the ball, right? Like, that seems like a pretty basic thing to do, but I don't know. So I'm going to go page 1 because that's the easy answer. I think I'm going to go Aaliyah number 2 because she's sneaky got size. She's 6'3". That's like nothing to sneeze at. And she's more in the mold of like a wing. So I could see them kind of trying to turn her into more of a power forward type player as opposed to playing on the outside. And like, Gino can't stop talking about Aaliyah whenever he's asked about her. He seems to be really, really high on her. And from what we know, she's got a really, really high work ethic and she just goes after the ball. So I think she's going to be kind of in that mold of Aubrey, but I think a little more rounded and fine. What's the word I'm looking for? Like, just more developed coming into college because she's played with the senior Canadian national team. So she's got to be pretty good. So I think I'm going to put her number 2. Now it gets tricky. So like if you have Aubrey and then you have Aaliyah taking that disruptor off the bench, does that kind of limit the opportunities for Mir to play right off the bat? Yeah. Oh, this is tough. Wow. all right. I think I'm going to go Mir number 3, just by the, like, a similar nature to Aaliyah and Aubrey last year, where it's a lot easier to make an impact as a super athletic player that can play defense by grabbing rebounds than it is for a freshman point guard who kind of has to learn the offense a little bit more and is more reliant on creating their own shots and getting to the basket and facilitating for their teammates. So that leaves me with what, Piath and Nika?
Yep.
That's tough. See, I just have no idea what to expect out of Piath. I think that's the like thing I'm caught up on is like she's raw, but I really don't know like how raw she is. Like all Gino said is like basically we'll see what she is when she gets here. And like it sounds like they basically recruited her for her size. So all right, I'll go Nika number 4. And then let's go PF number 5, Autumn number 6. But I will use this time to drop a hot take that I think at some point in her career, I think Autumn's actually going to make her way into the rotation.
I mean, yeah.
She seems like she's a little bit different than most walk-ons. And that's not super uncommon for a UConn walk-on to actually get some minutes because, like, if you look at the most recent ones they've had, Tierney Lawler and Brianna Pulido weren't like turning down D1 offers to come to UConn. They more just saw Brianna Stewart's tweet asking for walk-on tryouts and decided to give it a go and basically just worked harder than everyone else. So they weren't like going to be playing in college anyways. But I think the fact that Autumn was going to be at a D1 school somewhere or at a top junior college, Oregon State had some interest too. So like, that's not, they've been growing as a program. So I think it won't happen this year just because I think there's too many players, but I think at some point, well, not like there's not a roster crunch coming in a few years, but I do think she works her way into some minutes beyond just blowouts.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take. Like you said, she's obviously different than a lot of the walk-ons they've had before. She's going to be, you know, in the program from year one, so she's going to be training with them all, getting used to Geno style. So a lot of opportunities for her to kind of make a spot for herself going forward.
She also like played 2 basketball games with coronavirus. Like, that's insane. So she's definitely not like just an average high school kid. All right, we're going to go into a quick ad break. We'll be back in a second.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, and we're back. So as we've referenced about 50 times throughout the first section of the podcast, we have no idea when the season's going to start. So the Big East canceled all fall sports. UConn canceled its football season. And this past week, the NCAA said that it's going to provide some guidance to schools about what winter sports could possibly look like or if it would be safe for them to continue by mid-September. So that's roughly a month away. I think it's tough because if you're not having fall sports, then you're inherently punting this question down the road. But are things really going to be improved by November to the fact to if the season can tip off in time or at least not get delayed super far? It's really tricky, and I feel like there's no one has an answer yet, right?
Yeah, I feel similarly. I think it's only 2.5 months away, but at the same time, with everything with this virus, it just seems like information just comes day by day. So no one really has any idea what things are going to look like 2.5 months from now. But right. Then you need to like plan ahead. I think like the NCAA coming out and saying they're going to say something in September is an improvement from obviously what's going on with the college football season right now, where it's just like a total disaster. The season's supposed to start like now, and we're just still making decisions. So I do think it's at least good to see that there's like some thought going into it, that like 2 seconds before it's supposed to start. I don't know. There's so many ideas being tossed around, right? Like there's the bubble idea being tossed around, but is that feasible for college is a whole nother question. It's just like a lot of different sentiments out there about how things are going to go. So basically a giant question mark.
Right. And like the bubble's tough because like it makes sense for pro sports when they're professional athletes. So like this is their job to do it. But no matter how much we want to make fun of the NCAA calling student athletes, like they still do have school requirements that they're obligated to attend to. And it's not like there's some universal agreement between schools about who's in-person classes and who's online only this semester. So if it was like, if the entire Big East could decide that, okay, we're going to go completely online only for this semester, then yeah, you can have a bubble because all the kids can take their classes on their computers. And if they all have their own rooms or at least are in small groups in their own rooms, then I think you can handle that workload. But that's still a really long time to just be in a hotel room or even at best a villa like the WNBA is, which I think it would be very generous to think those are going to be the accommodations that it could work. And obviously Gino was not a fan of the idea. So I think if college basketball is going to happen, it's at least going to happen on campus with travel happening in some capacity.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. It just doesn't totally seem feasible to do the bubble at a college level. I feel like there's some traction of most schools are kind of going with this plan right now of all classes go online after Thanksgiving. So is there an opportunity to basically use campuses like as a bubble for starting the season then? I'm obviously like if you had a camp, there's probably somewhat of a court number of court issue, but like there's housing, there's food, there's basically everything you need from the bubble, and if the campus is empty except for student athletes, that could maybe work, but obviously a lot of logistical things there. And then also, well, what happens when kids are supposed to come back to campus in January? That's a big question still. Yeah, I guess we'll see. So hard to like try to think about what it will look like.
Right, exactly. I feel pretty good that there's going to be some season in some capacity because you can realistically like push the NCAA tournament back a pretty good amount. Like you can play the NCAA tournament in like June because I mean, even assuming there's not even fans at that point for some reason, like there's a million arenas around the country that you can use to play games. And like even with the women's game, they play in home arenas for the first two rounds anyways. Maybe you just play in home arenas until the Final Four just to make it easier, because it's not like Gamble's going to be used in like late April, early May, except for graduation. So like that's going to be available, unlike maybe like the Excel Center or like the TD Garden, just like places that have other tenants. So even if you start the season in January and there's a better control on the virus by then, and you can play a somewhat normal schedule with a little bit of non-conference and conference, January to June is still 6 months. Like that's pretty much the length of the season anyway. So I think college basketball has a lot more flexibility than everyone else, where even if it doesn't start in November, I think you can still figure out a plan to make it look somewhat normal, even if it's delayed.
Yeah, I agree with that. For the most part, there's really no reason that the season can't go into June. The women's game is a little interesting because if the WNBA was going to start on time, we're going to
Right.
have some overlap there. I don't think that's an issue for the men's game. The draft is probably late enough that it doesn't matter. But so that's kind of like one thing, but that's a small logistic to assume that one, the WNBA season is going to start on time, and also it's a small subset of players, right? So I'm sure there could be find a way to make some kind of accommodations where players that are drafted join their WNBA teams after the season or whatever.
Right. Or they have like a rookie start date and like just throw out a random date, July or something. Like I think if those are the issues that you're dealing with next summer, then things have probably gone pretty well. So I think just one of the bigger concerns might be that like what happens with college basketball might just be completely out of the control of like actual basketball teams, because like you look at what's happening around some of the schools, like UNC's already shut down for the semester, and I don't even know if they even started classes. Like Notre Dame's already decided they're going online. The last numbers that I saw for UConn was that 25 students are in quarantine and seven have tested positive, some of three of who are commuters. But I imagine you've seen the videos that have gone around of the parties in the dorms. Like it's really tough to convince college kids to not be social. So I think it's going to be more of a factor of if these campuses can keep the kids safe now that everyone's back on campus. And I think that's going to be more of the concern going forward, less than can you execute sports safely? Because I think we're starting to get to a point where they're figuring out how you can do sports safely. Like baseball's had some issues, for a good chunk of the league, that's gone off well. The USL, again, some issues, but they're playing in home markets and it's, for the most part, been smooth sailing. So I think if you make it like a December 1st start date, with the way things are progressing, you would hope that by then there would be some solution that would make this feasible.
Yeah, agreed. Obviously, having more kids on campus obviously adds complications to college kids. Don't blame them at all. I mean, I can think about what I would
Right.
have been doing if I was in college. So I'm
I
sure
think
I would
about what I was doing in college in March.
Exactly. So I mean, you can't really blame them. I feel like it's not totally fair to like blame the kids for it. It's like
It should have been expected when kids were brought back on campus to like not have anticipated that being an issue is kind of foolish. I mean, for what it's worth, in Connecticut too, like I'm pretty sure like the actual like state rule is like you are allowed to have like a 25 person indoor gathering. So not that I would put 25 people in my house right now, but like,
right,
like basically like you're not fitting more than 25 kids in a dorm room. So that's basically what they're doing. So I feel for them in that like they're basically doing what's technically allowed, but like obviously it's not a good situation.
Do not question what a college kid can do with their dorm room.
Okay, you could fit more than 25 people. I'm definitely showing my age a little bit. And I'm like, God, I wouldn't want to be in one of those rooms with 25 people.
No, definitely not. But yeah, so I mean, I think it's just like as it's been for the last, how long have we been in quarantine? 5 months? It's really? Just like, all right, we'll wait and see. Like maybe tomorrow will be terrible. Maybe it won't be. Like all we can do is hope. So like I said, I think at some point there's a college basketball season. I just don't really know what it looks like or when it'll be.
Yeah, I agree. At some point there's a season. At some point there's a tournament. There's a question mark on the start date, how long that season is. Is it non-conference play, just conference play? But something will happen, hopefully.
Right. So we're going to go into one last ad break and then come back with some basketball that is happening and talk about UConn and the WNBA.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. And we're back. So WNBA season is about midway through. 16 UConn players in the WNBA this year. A lot of interesting stuff to talk about. So I feel like the first place you have to start is just the way Crystal Dangerfield started her rookie year. I assumed that she was going to be a good player, like regardless of what happened, but I didn't think she would just casually be one of the best point guards in the league less than like a year into her career.
Yeah, I think her start's been crazy. I mean, obviously thought she was ready for the league, thought that even though she's small, that she could have a really strong career in the WNBA. I mean, I think what's going on right now, everything that Cheryl Reeves said when the season started is like basically the opposite, right? It's just Cheryl Reeves was like, she's not going to start. She's not going to get the bench. Like, we
good
want
one,
her
Cheryl.
For long term, but like, this isn't going to be her year. But I guess Crystal had other ideas. Partly some injuries and stuff, she's ended up in that starting lineup, but she's just like, they can't take her out of it at this point. She's just been with them. I think she's third off the links in scoring, so one of their top scorers. She's obviously played the point amazing for them, but then playing close to 30 plus minutes a game, she's had an incredible start. I think she's probably been maybe like 3 weeks ago a hot take to say she was in the rookie of the year race, but at this point with injuries and everything else going on, I think she's probably the favorite to win rookie of the year at the moment. So it was a totally awesome start for her, basically.
I just don't understand how 15 teams passed on Crystal Dangerfield. Like obviously, yeah, she's short, but how much does height really matter with a point guard? It's not like you're drafting her as a center, although that would be entertaining to watch, but first off, you know that UConn players are going to be good in the WNBA. Like, when was the last time a UConn player was drafted high and didn't really turn out to be anything? I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. Like, they all end up being, at least at worst, like solid role players off the bench for you. So with what was supposed to be a weaker draft class, like, wouldn't you kind of want that like high floor, even if it might be in theory a low ceiling type player? Like, I made this comparison around draft time, but it was kind of like Gabby Williams and Kia Nurse when they came out, because Gabby was the super high upside player, but you knew she had a little bit more of the bust potential, where you knew that Kia Nurse was going to be a good player in the WNBA. It was just going to be a matter of how good she was. And clearly she's an all-star. Same thing with Megan Walker and Crystal Dangerfield. Like, I think Megan Walker can be a good player in the WNBA, but she's also got that bust potential, whereas Crystal was never going to flame out of this league. It's just like, I really can't wrap my head around how she went to 16. And this is when I really wish that I can just like ask every single GM, like, please just tell me, like, I'm not going to report it. I just want to know, like, why? Like,
yeah, I was actually like looking back at the draft today, and I was like, when I was like going into draft night, I thought she could have gotten as high as like six. Like, the Lynx picking her up at six would have been a good fit, I guess.
Same.
What she was doing, because she got her at 16, which is obviously a steal. I mean, half of those picks are like were New York picks, and I mean, that's if right. New York had gone with like size or something that they needed, like, I could have understand passing on her, because they do have like a pretty young, strong backcourt. But I mean, they picked other guards, so the fact that they just totally pass on Crystal is interesting to me, especially because other than Laysha Clarendon, they don't really have a true point guard. I don't really, Sabrina's not a true point guard. She didn't play the point in college. She's really better off the ball. So she would have obviously been a good pick for them at the point. Then you had Phoenix, I guess, made sense to pass on her, but kind of looking at other teams, I was just like, I can't believe that she fell all the way to 16.
Right. Like, considering, like, there's 12 teams in the WNBA, like 16 doesn't sound super low, but that's like a long way to drop. And I mean, like, I would like to know what Cheryl Reeve has like given up to get not just Crystal to drop to her, but like Nafisa dropped a little bit to even get to the Lynx. Like, we all thought that Nafisa was going to go before Katie Lou, and Katie Lou ended up going number three, but like, how Fisa even got to Minnesota is incredible. So Cheryl Reeve has more or less just been gifted two UConn players from the WNBA gods. And like, if they ever get Maya Moore back, holy crap.
Exactly. Like, I mean, Minnesota's already much better this year than I think anyone would have anticipated, but if they had Maya Moore on that team, they would be probably up there with Seattle in the rankings right now. It's been, yeah. And yeah, the fact that Nafisa fell to six will still baffle me. It'll always baffle me. I mean, she had probably, I know she didn't win player of the year or anything, but she had basically a national player of the year senior season in college. She's like one of the best total numbers in UConn ever. Like, her career gets underrated a little bit, but she's such a good player. And obviously, you know, it's first year all-star. If there was going to be an all-star game this year, she'd probably be an all-star in the slight MVP. She's not really in the MVP conversation, but like, her name's not like so far off the list that you couldn't like bring her up in that context. So someone that's going to have just like an incredible WNBA career that, again, she'll basically get gifted because no one else took her before six.
There's still no reason that she should have been left off every single player of the year award as a senior. Like, that was just ridiculous. Like, people would always be like, oh, who are you taking off? It's like, no, who are you putting on instead of Nafisa? Like, Sabrina, okay, I understand the argument to at least also have her on the list, but like, Nafisa was, did she average a double double? I think she did. Yeah, right? She was like, just a machine.
Yeah,
a literal machine. Like, so Cheryl Reeve is a very, very lucky person, but she's not Seattle. Seattle's just a joke. Like, come on, they're 10-1, but no one's beating them.
Yeah, I honestly wouldn't be totally shocked if they just like don't lose another game for the rest of the season. They're just so much better than everyone else right now. I think there was a status on Twitter today of something like their average margin of victory over the last like 1, 2 through 5 games, and basically all of them were like league records. It was just like insane. So yeah, they're beating everyone by a lot. I mean, I don't think anyone's surprised. They took basically their whole 2018 championship team, brought that whole team to the bubble. Everyone else is kind of without pieces that would make them contenders. And then adding the fact that that team is better than it was in 2018 because they had to find a way to win last year without Stewie and without Sue Bird. So they're just like so much better in different positions than they were, and they could rely on the two of them. So just a very deep, very good team.
Did you see that photo of Sue Bird and Stewie on the bench? Like, the screenshot? And they both are just, like, incredibly bored because the game's not even close. I think it was Matt Ellentuck tweeted it. And he's like, they just want some competition. It's like, yeah, generally when UConn players go to the NBA, that's, like, when they actually start losing games. Like, this is basically just, like, college again for those two.
Yeah, it's insane. They're just, like you said, so much better than everyone else. It's insane. I mean, not to say that, like, that's the normal case in the WNBA, right? Like, this is definitely a unique situation.
Right.
There's a lot of star players missing that would have made that a little bit different. I think either way, Seattle was probably the favorite to win the title this year, but they would have had a little bit more competition in a normal season.
Yeah, and I think it also helps that Stewie's pretty much just like picked up where she left off the last time she was playing in the WNBA. Because like we watched her play against UConn in the exhibition game for Team USA, and like she was barely a shell of her old self, which is like not knocking her because it was her first game back from the Achilles. But I think the fact that there are a couple more exhibition games between then and the start of the WNBA season, but she really hadn't played in a ton of games until the WNBA season started. The fact that she really hasn't missed a beat is incredible.
Yeah, I'd say at this point she's probably the favorite to win MVP. Between her and Asia Wilson are kind of the two names that everyone's jumping on right now, but yeah, I would say she's probably the favorite of those two. Hasn't missed a beat at all.
So, important question. For however long until Breanna Stewart retires, win the MVP in more than 50% of those seasons?
I feel like that would be totally unheard of, but Breanna Stewart is also like a level of basketball player that we haven't really seen in anyone else either. So I don't know that more than 50%, but I have a feeling she'll have quite a few MVP trophies by the time she retires.
I feel like, at least I would hope, like by the end of her like professional basketball career, that like I don't think she's underrated by any means at UConn. Like I think most people acknowledge she's one of the best at UConn of all time, if not the best. But like with Stewie, there's always that qualifier of, oh yeah, but that class that she had, or like the teams that she had compared to like Brianna or Diana Taurasi. But it's also like, yeah, but like literally nobody could stop her. And like, I think we're finally seeing that at the WNBA level, where it's like, to be fair, like Seattle is still also loaded, but I think she has a lot more responsibility and has to handle a lot more than she did in college. When like her senior year, I think they had three players that weren't WNBA draft picks, and two of them were the walk-ons. And the other one went on to become the all-time three-point leader at Arizona State in Courtney Ekmark. So like, it's a step down in terms of help, but like not a huge step. So I think just like basically Breanna Stewart is extremely good at basketball, in case people didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when people make that comparison, like, yes, it's true, but I mean, in college she had all those players. I mean, she played like probably less than 30 minutes a game most games, right? Because like no one could touch them. Like even her, like our last year, they're national championship game they won by like a ton. It's just like there was just no team that like could even come close.
Not to go super off topic, but the 2016 Final Four just remains like the funniest thing to think about, because like I remember it being such a big thing of like, oh, what a breakthrough for the sport. You've got all like three new teams that have never been to the Final Four before: Washington, Oregon State, Syracuse. Oh yeah, and by the way, the best team ever that's just gonna roll over whoever like ends up in their way, so it doesn't really matter. Like, it just, the dichotomy of it, of like such a great step up for the sport, but at the same time, like, no one's beating UConn anyways. Like, that UConn team probably could have beaten some bad WNBA teams. Like, they were just so loaded, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, my parents like went to that Final Four and it was their first one, and they're like, we're going all in on like the good seats because it's basically a guarantee, like there, you don't have to worry.
Right, it's like this year it's like being stressed, like, all right, Final Four is in New Orleans, like really want them to make it, but like at the same time I'm not super confident they're gonna get there, so like gotta decide.
I was supposed to go either way. Sad Final Four to rest would have been a great location, but
I know. It's just very on brand. Like, it's in Tampa every other year, which, not to knock Tampa, but Tampa kind of sucks. Yeah. Like New Orleans, oh, that would have been so much fun. But anyways.
I think it's San Antonio this year, so if it happens.
I thought it was Minneapolis.
That's the following year.
I always forget San Antonio. I've heard San Antonio is fun, though.
Yeah, I've heard a good thing. So hopefully we'll get to go this year before it gets cold in Minneapolis. Minneapolis in March is not going to be a fun time.
Hopefully we just get to go. Hopefully there is Final Four. I think that's the first step.
Yeah, let's just hope for that.
So sticking with the warm climates, Bria Hartley. Holy crap.
Yeah. This has been insane for... obviously for Phoenix. I think everyone like kind of questioned when she signed a max contract, this offseason, they're like, what are we paying her the max for? I think Phoenix has more than answered that question. Like, I mean, she started the first few games, I believe. Now is coming off the bench for them, but probably sixth woman of the year. She keeps coming off the bench. I think she's still in the top 10 in the league in points per game. Been super efficient for them. I think no one really expected that coming out of her season in New York last year, the past couple of years. Kind of just been average, underwhelming contributor off the bench, but really being a star in Phoenix this year.
Right. I mean, I feel like she'd have to like either get injured or like really collapse to not get the sixth woman of the year award at this point, just with how condensed the season is. Like, someone would have to make up a lot of ground. Like, what other six players are scoring 30 points a game off the bench? Like, you don't hear that in any basketball ever. That's like some Jeremy Lin type stuff.
Yeah. Got a case for most improved player too, which would be funny. Could UConn sweep the like major awards this year to be determined? They won't get defensive player of the year, but like MVP, that would be rookie, really... sixth woman of the year could all be UConn players.
And I feel like it's all like UConn players like leading it at this point, right? Like, rookie of the year would probably be the closest one at this point, I would guess, right?
Yeah, I feel like the MVP one is a little open still, but I mean, Stewie's the best player on the best team.
Not
if she doesn't win it, but Asia's stats are really, really good. So I think she has a case as well.
Yeah, so, all right, I'm going to hit you with some quickfire WNBA questions. You aren't allowed to think.
Okay.
First one's really easy. So the best UConn player in the WNBA right now?
Stewie, that's not bad.
Who's the best? Okay, I'm going to eliminate the Seattle Storm from this option. Who's the best team in the WNBA with UConn players on it?
If Seattle's not an option, Chicago.
Okay. Thoughts on Azaree Stevens while we're here?
She's been great this season. Obviously, I think the perfect trade, right, for Chicago at least. Lou didn't do great there, but Azaree just fits a huge hole that they had in their rebounding and in their front court. She's been phenomenal for them. No surprise.
I'm going to eliminate Bria Hartley from this next one. Biggest UConn surprise this year?
Crystal Dangerfield.
Okay. Most improved? That's not Bria Hartley.
I'm not supposed to think, but I would say either Azaree, who's obviously but she hasn't really played that much, and Gabby Williams belongs in that conversation as well. She's had a much better season this year than she did last year.
I'm going to circle back. Best player that's not Breanna Stewart?
Like, that's playing currently?
Yeah, best UConn player that's playing currently. That's not Breanna Stewart.
I'm going to say Nafisa, it might be a hot take. Not that Diana and Sue aren't great. They're just not in their prime anymore. Nafisa's been great.
Right. Did you see the story? I think ESPN, it came out yesterday or today, that Diana Taurasi's had back problems for the last 20 years.
I did not see that, but that's insane.
Yeah, she takes 20 minutes to, or not 20 minutes, 2 hours to like get ready for every single game because of her back problems. There's definitely a joke about her carrying the team in there, but like the fact that she's like far and wide the greatest player of all time with back problems, like, that's insane.
Yeah, it is totally insane. Also, kind of unrelated side note, but I really want one of those t-shirts that they have with,
like, oh my god, yeah.
Like, I need them to be sold.
Also, I need them to sell the ones that Gino was wearing with the like Sharpie written a GA production. Like, that makes the shirt like 20 times better.
It does. They really should sell both versions. I would buy both.
I don't know why they haven't. Like,
no, I don't know what it is either.
Is it just one of those things where they're like making it like a hot commodity so that like once they finally put it on the market, like the site's just going to crash because everyone wants it so bad? But
probably,
yeah, I feel like we need one of those. They should just, like, if they ever retire Diana's number at UConn, which I'm not totally sure they will, because I feel like retiring 3 is a little more difficult than like retiring 50 for Rebecca Lobo. But instead of having like the big banner that they put up for Rebecca Lobo or like something that looks like the Huskies of Honor thing, they should just put up that logo. like the goat with the three. And like, I don't think you need to explain it to anyone. And if you have to explain it to someone at a UConn game, like they shouldn't be at the game anyways. So
they're not a real fan.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And the last one, since basically half the UConn stars in the NBA were injured, WNBA were injured last year, which player is the best to see back? Not necessarily like playing the best, just the one that you're personally happiest to watch again.
I think probably Sue Bird, just because there's probably not a lot of Sue Bird years left. I mean, we've got plenty of Sue Bird years left, but probably Sue Bird.
It, hot take, has the coronavirus sneaky extended their careers? Because both of them were at the USA game this past year. We're both kind of talking about how the Olympics were really going to be like their final run. So were they going to go obviously win gold medals and then maybe run through like one more WNBA season before like feeling like, all right, this is it. So now that the Olympics are postponed another year, does that extend their career another year or two? I don't know, but it's a thought. Cause I know Sue Bird said that if like this season didn't happen, she was going to retire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it might at least like probably guarantees that they're going to play the Olympics next year. They'll probably play them in WNBA next year as well, just cause timing wise, it's all at the same time basically. So I guess one silver lining of coronavirus might be that we get one extra year of Bird and Diana Taurasi.
Just to be clear, like the single silver lining.
The only one.
That's all we got for today. So thank you for listening to the first ever episode of Chasing Perfection. You can follow Megan on Twitter at Megan Gower. Follow me on Twitter at Daniel V. Connolly. Subscribe to the UConn Women's Basketball Weekly. Read the UConn blog and Story Central. Megan, do you have anything else to plug?
That's it.
Well, that'll do it for us. Thanks for listening. All right, so we're going to take an ad. All right, we're going to take a quick ad break. We'll be back in a little bit to talk about... we'll try this one again. Explode.